Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqat tajba tal-Bank of Valletta. Campus FM jippreżenta Mhux kelma bejn tnejn, l-intervista tal-Bank of Valletta. Jippreżentaw il-program Father Joe Borch u l-Professur Joe Pirotta.
Father Joe Borch fil-għawkom għal-edizzjoni oħra tal-programm mhux kelma bejn tnejn l-intervista tal-BOV l-lum il-programm kunu qed nagħmluh bl-Ingliż għax il-mistidna tagħna hija Ingliża, Tink Palmer. I welcome you, Tink, to the program.
Thank you very much indeed.
Tink Palmer għandha esperjenza kbira qasam tal-ħajja li kieku ma jeżistix, kien ikun aħjar għax qed nitkellmu dwar l-abbuż tat-tfal. U f'dawn l-aħħar snin ħadmet ħafna u mbagħad ukoll fil-qasam tal-internet di l-invenzjoni meraviljuża li tagħmel il-ħajja tagħna tant differenti milli kienet qabel u tant aħjar, imma li bħall-ħajja fiżika tagħna tista' tiġi abbużata minn ħuta. I was telling my listeners, I think that you have vast experience in an area which you would have like have never existed, abuse. And that in the last 2 years you have zeroed in on this fantastic invention, the internet, which like physical life can also be abused. So let's start discussing the issue of abuse in general.
Sure.
And your area of specialization is abuse of minors, abuse of children.
Right.
Is there a profile that some children will be abused while others will not be abused?
I think it's much easier if we are able to have a profile that certain children will be abused, sexually abused in particular, mm-hmm. is what we're talking about, and others won't be. But our knowledge and our experience tells us that children come from all walks of life who are sexually abused, and so the perpetrators come from all walks of life. Mm-hmm. And I think that as members of our societies that we all live in our communities, it's much more comfortable to think that a sexual abuser is someone you'd recognise, that they're out there, they're nothing to do with all of us, and that we are sort of safe away from them. But what we do know is that sexual abusers live within our communities, that they could be anybody from any profession, any income, any social class.
They say also that generally that people who abuse, there is at least that's what I was reading. Children sometimes are abused or often are abused also by persons within their same group, their same family, friends, or family friends, etc., people that they know.
Absolutely. All the statistics, if we add it all together and look at them, is that at least 80 to 85% of children who are sexually abused are sexually abused by someone they know. So it could be a family member, it could be their teacher, it could be a relative, it could be a family friend, it could be the scoutmaster, because let's face it, some people actually join professions and groups where they know they're going to be able to easily access children.
Mm-hmm. So this area of abuse is difficult then to identify because we do not have a profile of the abused and we don't have a profile of the abuser. There is no easy stereotype that you can sort of look around and you say he abuses children or he is an abused child.
Absolutely. And often what I do if I'm doing a presentation, I'll put a picture up of a football crowd, you know, with hundreds of people there, and then I say, now which one of those is the abuser?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you cannot pick them out. You cannot pick them out in that way. Mm-hmm. So what we need to be aware of within our communities, all of us, is how do people get close to children to harm them?
Mm-hmm.
And what sort of behaviours, what sort of little signs might we pick up so we're able to prevent it happening or to stop it happening?
Okay, so let's move from abuse in general and we go to internet abuse.
Sure.
And let's listen to this short feature about the internet and also internet use in Malta. The feature has been prepared by our colleague Elaine Bohajan.
Regolarment nisimgħu dwar il-preokkupazzjoni tal-ġenituri meta wliedhom ikunu fuq l-internet. Ma jafux eżattament ma' min wliedhom qed jitkellmu, ma jafux minn hemm fil-parti l-oħra tal-konverzazzjoni. L-użu ta' chatrooms u social networks bħal Facebook, Twitter u oħrajn huma kollha komponenti li jħassbu mhux biss il-ġenituri imma li dawk kollha li għandhom għall-qalbhom il-ġid tat-tfal u l-adolexxenti. Qed isir xi ħaġa dwar dan? L-użu tat-teknoloġija li tant niddependu minnha qiegħda tkun kawża li t-tfal saħansitra jaslu jibdlu l-identità u l-personalità tagħhom, jinħbew wara immaġni li mhijiex reali, għandhom biżejjed għarfien il-ġenituri u tfal għandhom biżejjed protezzjoni. Il-messaġġi edukattivi ta' prevenzjoni f'dan il-qasam qegħdin ikunu effettivi biżejjed? Skont tħarriġ li għamlet il-Malta Communications Authority f'Ottubru tal-2010, Use of ICT by Minors, 97% ta' tfal għandhom aċċess għall-internet. Terz minnhom għandhom l-internet fil-kamra tas-sodda tagħhom, però din iċ-ċifra illum żiedet minħabba li l-internet mit-tfal illum qed jiġi aċċessat anki fuq il-mobile jew laptop tagħhom. L-istudju sar fost it-tfal tal-primarja u anki sekondarja. 80% ta' tfal intervistati għandhom aċċess għal social networking bħal Facebook, Twitter u MSN. 63% ta' tfal fil-livell primarju ta' bejn is-7 u l-11-il sena jużaw l-MSN, fil-waqt li 60% jużaw il-Facebook. Rridu niftakru li biex tuża social network ta' Facebook, pereżempju, trid mill-inqas ikollok 13-il sena. Fost dawk li moru l-iskola sekondarja, 84% ta' tfal ta' bejn il-11 u 13-il sena jużaw il-Facebook, fil-waqt li 9.2% tal-adolexxenti ta' bejn 13 u il-15-il sena jużaw Facebook u social networks oħrajn. Fil-programm tal-lum mhux kelma bejt nej Fader Joe Borch u l-professur Joe Pirotta se jlaqgħuna ma' Think Palmer, esperta internazzjonali f'dan il-qasam u chief executive tal-Mary Collins Foundation. F'Malta u f'pajjiżi oħrajn tal-Unjoni Ewropea għandna l-proġett Bismart Online, proġett kofinanzjat mis-Safer Internet Programme tal-Kummissjoni Ewropea. Palmer ila taħdem fil-qasam soċjali sa mill-1973 u ila taħdem mat-tfal u l-familja għal dawn l-aħħar 35 sena. Sa mill-1999 speċjalizzat fuq l-abbuż sesswali teknoloġiku fuq it-tfal u għandha bosta esperjenzi kliniċi u forensiċi f'dawn l-oqsma. Il-proġett Bismart Online qed jinħadem bejn il-Malta Communications Authority, il-Foundation for Social Welfare Services, id-Direttorat tal-Servizzi Edukattivi u l-Kummissarju għat-tfal. Iżda mhux biss, hemm ukoll is-support meħtieġ tas-Cyber Crime Unit tal-Pulizija Maltija u s-Segretarjat tal-Edukazzjoni u l-Iskejjel tal-Knisja. Hemm ukoll il-helpline 179 li jibqa' dej 24 siegħa għal 7 tiegħim fil-ġimgħa, kif koll is-sit bismartonline.org.mt servizz għal ġenituri, tfal u edukaturi biex jitgħallmu aktar dwar l-elementi kollha li jwasslu għall-użu tajjeb tal-internet u fejn anki jistgħu jirrapportaw abbużi. Però aktar dwar dan fid-diskussjoni tal-lum mhux kelma bejtnej.
That feature gave us an idea about internet use and internet use in Malta. Now, you speak against abuse through the internet, and you do a lot of work in that area, and you do this work on the international scene, not just in one country, even your CV shows your work on your involvement with UNESCO, etc., etc., etc. Are you an internet basher? Are you telling us... this is horrible, this is a den of corruption, don't use the internet?
Of course not. The internet is a part of our life. In fact, it is. I find it very difficult now to distinguish, as do young people, between when people talk about online and offline experiences, because for young people in particular, the whole thing is enmeshed in their psychological development, and the internet is part of life. It's no good bashing the internet, it's no good praising it like that. It is part of life. And what do we get in life? We get some very good experiences and good things, and we get some poor and bad experiences. And it's only a reflection of what I call life before the internet. Mm-hmm. Life online is a reflection of how the human being is and our human condition, and which is can be good, very happy, positive, and other times can be disappointing, sad, and perhaps sometimes dangerous. But that's no different to life offline.
We were saying that there isn't a profile, a stereotype of the abused child or the abuser. that's in our physical life. I prefer that term to the term in our real life, because internet is real as well.
Absolutely.
Does that apply also to the internet, that in the sense that you cannot pick up on a group or particular children and you say these are more vulnerable than others, they could be abused more than others? Let's leave the abusers alone for the moment.
I think what's been interesting with the child victims online abuse, we're having some quite sort of philosophical discussions about vulnerability online and which children may be and which may not be. So you use your logic and you look at children who are vulnerable just within society every day. And I guess children will be vulnerable because of their young age. But children are also vulnerable because of their age when they get to 12, 13 and 14. And I'll explain what I mean. Because when children are young, most children aged 4, 5, 6 and 7 are not going onto the internet without some sort of supervision from somebody. Get them to 9, 10, 11, they start wanting more independence. Mm-hmm. In 11, 12, 13, from my experience, is probably the most difficult time and the time when they may be most at risk. But then that is the same reflected in life generally, because we are going through puberty at that age, we are testing out, and the internet offers a place to test out, just as community in which they live offers a place to test out. And my experience is that that is a really difficult age, as reflected generally in child development anyway, and we need to be aware of what safeguards and what education and what support we can give young people in at that age group, not to get themselves set up with someone who might groom them.
So basically you are saying, if I understand you correctly, that the fact that children are children makes them vulnerable. The fact that children are passing now on to adolescence makes them vulnerable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you said that young children perhaps are not as vulnerable as adolescents because computer use would be more supervised. Mm-hmm. But today, with these handsets, with these smartphones, and today I think the number of very young children who would have a kind of phone from where they could access the internet even when they are at school. Isn't that an increase in the danger?
It is an increase in the danger, but what needs to accompany such products, basically, is education for parents. And educated parents will make sure that there are safety implications for the child, that there are safeguards, and that certain things are unavailable to the child until they get to a certain age, when they can then unlock that and let the child access them. So I guess it's about, we need to help parents parent properly in the new age, as it were, and empower them that it's just as you would say to your child, well, I would say to my child or my grandchildren now, you know, age 6 or 7, no, you can't do that because, then you need to be able to say the same things when it comes to use of new technology, whatever it might be.
Let's look at the abusers now. Is it like our physical life? There is no profile of the abuser? Anyone can be an abuser? Or perhaps it's easier to be an abuser in the internet because they are not seeing you, can put a different picture. You have more privacy, sort of.
Yeah, I think the grooming's a little bit different in the sense that if you're grooming offline, you've actually got to geographically get yourself in the proximity of a child and a family and a situation. Often they groom the situation and the adults around the child before they groom the child. And therefore their visibility is far higher in that sense. Their digital footprint, mind you, when online and grooming a child, they might think they're invisible, but we know, in fact, they're not as invisible as they think they are. But they are initially when it comes to the beginning of the grooming process, because they've got the child online in that situation.
Yeah, but we'll not say a lot about that, so that abusers will not know that they are being sort of, they are marking a trail.
Yes, I think they're aware.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's speak a little bit more about grooming, because sometimes there is also children can create problems in this sense. One is a 10-year-old and says that she is 20-year-old, and she would put pictures of one and someone else as a 20-year-old. So then you will tell someone who is who thinks that he is discussing with a 20-year-old, who is an adult, 20-year-old, and They are having a kind of a sexual conversation, etc. But that would be in the person's mind a conversation with an adult, when it is a conversation with a young child.
I think the whole grooming process online is really quite fascinating, and I think it's comfortable for us as the adults to think, oh, these poor children, they're you know, being completely duped by an adult. But what we know is that the internet, for some reason, disinhibits people emotionally and psychologically. And that's not just children, young people. I have friends who've been online and done things, and I've said to them, what on earth are you doing that for? You know, and so they said they just feel disinhibited. And we know that. There's a concept about something intrinsic with the internet and online world that makes people disinhibited and say things and behave in ways which they would not offline, and people say they would not. So what we're now seeing, and have done for the last 3 or 4 years, if not more, is young people who seem to be quite proactive in encouraging sexual conversation, sending of photographs, etc., etc. And I guess the key thing one has to remember, we are dealing with children. They have not reached their adult state of development psychologically and emotionally. And so no matter what they might be up to, they still need protecting, A, from being like that, and B, they need education about the dangers that puts them in.
Okay, so let's do a few distinctions. It's one situation if a 13-year-old girl, let's say, says that she's 25 and she meets a 45-year-old and they are discussing. Sort of he has been tricked, deceived. But I guess there would be also adults who go out of their way to seek children, because they are minors.
Absolutely, absolutely. But what is interesting and what we're finding is that young people will often know the age of their groomer online, and often the groomers are quite honest about their age. And they're also aware, and this is research by David Finkelor in the United States and colleagues, and they've done surveys over, you know, 5-year periods in between, so we have a consistent, longitudinal, hopefully, study, that young people are often fully aware that the chap they're going to meet is quite a bit older than they are, and they're fully aware they're going to go and meet him to have sex. And they go ahead and it happens. So we have a new complexity here as well. Again, he is wrong. He's the adult. We have the child here. But the child is getting some vicarious, self-esteem kick or something from doing this. But, of course, they're not in the long run, because then they suffer after. Okay. So, again, about education for the children. Okay.
Yeah. So you are referring to the situation where the online experience has now evolved into an offline experience in the physical world, they meet. And not quite naturally, this can only happen when distances are close enough.
Well, it can, but I'm just dealing with a matter at the moment in the UK, so I'll be mediumly vague about it, but I can give you the crystal of it, of a case of a young man who has been groomed online and who's questioning his sexuality and his sexual orientation. And the person who was grooming him travelled 5.5 hours to this boy's hometown to pick him up and to drive him back down. They'll travel, you know, which I think is all about a motivation. And I don't know about your law, but within the UK, if one can prove 2 connections online in a sort of grooming model, then the person who then goes out to meet the young person who's groomed online can then actually be arrested immediately.
Dawk il-kommenti naslu għat-tmin tal-ewwel parti tal-diskussjoni tagħna. Namlu din il-pawsa. Għasikira wara din il-pawsa inkomplu bid-diskussjoni u bl-intervista ma' Tink Palmer. Ebħu magħna.
Bank of Valletta qed joffri l-BOV Jeremy Financing Package. Kundizzjoni vantaġġjużi sabiex ikompli jsaħħaħ l-aċċess għall-intrapriżi żero medi Maltin u Awċin. Għal aktar informazzjoni kuntattja waħda mill-Ferrati u Business Centers tal-Bank of Valletta. Dan il-proġett huwa kofinanzjat mill-Unjoni Ewropea permezz tal-inizjattiva Jeremy, fih dan il-Fond Ewropew għall-Iżvilupp Reġjonali billan li jinvestu fil-futur ta' pajjiżna. Termin u kundizzjoni jappplikaw. Bank of Valletta. Impen lejn is-suċċess tiegħek.
Lura għall-programm l-intervista tal-BOV mhux kelma bejn tnejn jien Fader Joborf qed nitkellmu ma' Tink Palmer minn fundazzjoni li hi l-CEO tagħha il-Marie Collins Foundation. Okay. We'll continue speaking about abuse in a second and also the different kinds of abuse, because I think internet abuse is not only abuse when it moves from online to offline. It can stay online and be abused. Mm-hmm. But let's shelve that for a second. And let me go to the foundation of which you are the CEO, the Marie Collins Foundation. What is this foundation?
This foundation, I've been working with children who've been harmed online, mm-hmm. one way or another, since 1999. And in 2001, that sort of period, I was introduced to Marie Collins, mm-hmm. of which the foundation is named. And she was a woman who, at age 13, was sexually abused in hospital with a very serious mm-hmm. Condition. And the hospital chaplain would be supportive mm-hmm. and caring of the young people there and let the nurses go off and have a break. Mm. And during that period, he would sexually abuse some of the children. And Marie was one of them. But also he photographed her in the most compromising sexual ways. And she talks very fluently and eloquently on that matter and the impact on her. And in fact, I've done a lot of learning from her about how to help children and young people who are the subject of abusive images. She's also a very good woman who's putting back and hoping to support the Roman mm-hmm. Catholic Church in making itself safer, really, for children. And thus, as time went on, I realised that nationally within the UK, but also internationally, there is very, very little being done for the children who are harmed on the internet, sexually harmed. And therefore decided that there was a place to start up a separate organisation. And we are in our infancy, but mm. we're on our way and hopefully going to bring all the past experience that I've had and that other colleagues will have who will hopefully join me to really assist colleagues around the world to share our ideas and concepts. Mm-hmm. It needs to be international. We're dealing with an international issue, an international crime. No one's got the one answer, and it's only about working in partnership and supporting one another internationally that we're going to be able to make a difference for children. So this is why the charity has been produced, and why it's Marie Collins is because we think we have a wonderful figurehead who mm-hmm. understands what it's about, but also has been able to, through help, get on with her life and be a fulfilled adult.
Is the media sympathetic to your work? Do you get publicity from the media? Is it difficult to be on the media? Or do you think that the media sometimes tries to sensationalise even your work?
The media haven't really tried to sensationalise my work mm. so far. And they know me with the different hats I've mm. had on over my professional life. So I'm so quite used to working with the media. I guess the people who might find it difficult to perhaps offer funding or support mm-hmm. are probably the internet service providers and mobile network operators, because perhaps they feel that if they were to support this type of organisation that's mm-hmm. helping children who've been harmed, that it reflects on their products, etc., which of course it doesn't. But hopefully, you know, we do need funding support, and hopefully we'll be getting it from a wide source.
Yeah, but it's, I think this attitude of some of the part of the industry is very stupid, because as you are correctly saying, it will not affect them badly. It's like, imagine saying, all these brands that produce branded clothes, they would be in favor of clamping down on people who would be producing fake clothes.
Yeah.
So they should be, yeah. the industry should be in favor of anyone who
Absolutely.
Wants
Absolutely.
To. Okay, let's go to abuse back again. And I was putting forward the idea that when online abuse turns into offline abuse and they meet, there is sexual activity or whatever, that's one kind of abuse. But it could be also abuse if it stays online.
Absolutely.
Am I correct?
Absolutely. And we have different forms. So if we look at the sort of the grooming online, and we know we have, you know, you can have online sex, and that can take forms of various forms, and I'll just describe in brief detail what that might look like. First of all, the young woman might just strip off and expose herself mm-hmm. Through the webcam to mm-hmm. to the groomer. So that's one scenario, and it remains just between mm-hmm. the young woman and the groomer. But then you have other scenarios where the groomer may well actually arrange for some of his colleagues, some of his group, as it were, to be with him, and then to get the young person to abuse themselves online, mm-hmm. and it's live and it goes straight down, and that can happen. And of course, we also have what we call abuse, where the abuse will actually happen in some house because it would need to, but where a young person is sexually abused and it is live, and people pay either through drugs, through money, through exchanging some of their own images or whatever it might be, to be able to be part of the group that's allowed to watch this online abuse. And the reality is that often they will encourage more abuse of that child who mm-hmm. they're watching, and will maybe even direct what should happen to that child. They're very horrifying, those situations, but that's no different from offline, and I've known of cases of that offline as mm-hmm. well. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's only reflecting the human nature as we've known it for a long time is being shown online. So you've got online abuse, and you've got online abuse which leads to offline mm-hmm. abuse, yeah? And they're quite intermingled, actually. So, mm-hmm. And when we get to the term sexual exploitation, we really then start hitting a barrier, because that means a different thing to many, many different mm-hmm. people. And I'm actually looking at that for colleagues in the United States to say, what are we all meaning by this? How are we going to define it? Because we need to be able to do that so we're clear about what we're describing and how we can help okay. prevent.
Well, there is today an awareness of sex abuse of minors. There is an aversion in society. There is a strong reaction in society to it. But don't you think that there is a kind of a hypocritical streak in society? We are against abuse, but we are over-sexualizing our children at a very young age, so making them abuse easier. We live in a culture where it's so relativistic. What is good for me is good because it's good for me. That's what I believe. There is a lot of subjectivism. So don't you think that society is, on one hand, condemning abuse, but on the other hand, making abuse easier?
I think that's a really, really interesting point. Mm-hmm. And thank you for the question, uh-huh. because I think the way we are society generally is sexualizing children and childhood per se. Mm-hmm. We could get quite academic here and look back and say, well, when was childhood actually invented? Mm-hmm. As a concept, and actually it wasn't that very long ago, you know, but mm-hmm. I see the fact that we see childhood as something important and to be protected, as our growth in knowledge and understanding about human growth, human development, etc., etc. And so we as societies today have a belief that children need protecting until they can reach their majority, as it were. Mm-hmm. But what is happening is that we know that large companies, international companies, both clothing, cosmetics, modelling, mm-hmm. amongst others, are trying to sexualise children, make them sexual objects at younger and younger age, and also encouraging children to look in a stereotypical way, which is slim, you know, no blemishes mm-hmm. on your skin, exactly. a hair in a certain condition. And there's a wonderful 1-minute clip, sort of a warning by the Dove Foundation. And that's about, you know, keeping your children clear of the cosmetics industry, you know, because of what could happen, particularly cosmetics when you know, there are changes to perhaps the shape of your mm-hmm. face or your lips or whatever, and surgery for that. And I think we have double standards here that are operating. Probably that's not new, but it seems a bit stark at the moment.
Yes, exactly.
And I think our knowledge has increased so much. So, you know, what are we going to do and what are we going to allow society when it comes to the messages mm-hmm. that children and young people are given? And then we are shocked when we see young people being very blazing, very upfront, very talking in a very sexual manner, and they're only 12 and it's online and we can see it all. Why should we be surprised? And what responsibilities do we have in the broadest sense, as society mm-hmm, and communities, mm-hmm. about doing something about that?
It's exactly, because this question, I think, of a double standards, it's many people do not realize it, like the other question of parents using the media as babysitters. So what they are, what the parents are telling their children is that television is very, very important. It's something to be trusted because we leave you with that technology.
I think that that's very true, and I've had a number of cases where the television, internet, etc., has been the babysitter for the family. Mm-hmm. And one case in particular, when the father actually realised what had happened to his daughter, it's the first time I understood about internet being used as a babysitter, and it's the beginning of the 2000s, so we're looking about 10, 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the father just burst into tears. He said, "Oh, my God, I was just so satisfied she was up in her room on her own with her internet and communicating with friends that I've just realised I've just used it as a babysitter, and this is horrific."
And this is a common experience that you find that parents are very happy that their kids are very quiet in their room, and then they find out that they're being abused.
Absolutely. And so I guess the message for everybody is there is nothing like parents communicating with their children. You know, it's such an obvious statement to make, but actually it's absolutely key. And so it's also key about always have conversations about what you're doing online, just as if my children have been to the cinema or my grandchildren have been to see a children's sort of cinema film, when they get back, what do you ask? You say, "What was it like? How did it go? Who was in it?" So do the same about online. What have you been doing? You know, who you've been talking to? You've been doing work, etc. So it's a natural part of. And also, there's no problem, you know. And I think what should happen is, as you bring your children up, and new technology is just part of their life. It's not a separate thing. Well, then there are restraints and there are limitations within the use about the use of that and how long you can be on it, just as there would be with all other things that we have to put boundaries on for children. It's about setting good child rearing is about setting fair, honest, consistent boundaries.
Okay, let's go back, but from a different angle, perhaps this question of the sexualization of childhood. I think that images that perhaps 60 years ago would have been considered, if not as pornographic, as risque or too bold, and you could only find them in a clandestine way, now are part of primetime television. And we say that's more freedom, but we think of that as progress. But don't you think that also there is a possibility that what's happening is that when you are accustomed to those kind of images and they are now prime time, you need to get something harder to get your kick.
Absolutely. Very interesting comment by an author called Doigt, D-O-I-G-H-T. And it's a paperback book. And the title actually escapes me, but it came out last year. And he says that what was hardcore porn and soft porn 30 years ago, yeah, the hardcore of 30 years ago is now soft porn. And as you're absolutely right, it's on our television screens for people to see and watch, et cetera, et cetera. And what was the question? Sorry, just...
The question is that when we are doing this and children are getting accustomed to these images, then to get their kick, sort of, they need something
absolutely
harder.
Absolutely. Thank you for the reminder. Absolutely. The concerns are, and we know that people progress in their taste and their needs. So if you have a certain level, as it were, of abusive images of children or adult pornography or whatever it might be, that after a time you get desensitized to that and you want something stronger and you want something stronger. So an example I can give you is of a young man who was groomed online but encouraged to masturbate to pictures of adult pornography by his groomer. And by the end, his sexual fantasy that he required to reach satisfaction, as it were, was little boys of 6 months being buggered, you know? This is just...
Incredible.
And this isn't anything about this boy. It's about the person who led him into being like that. And, in fact, a very decent family. And it took 2.5 years to undo that fantasy and to replace it with an appropriate one for this young person. So, yes, it's no good saying it isn't progressive and that it can't lead on, because it can.
Fakrukom li tisimgħu l-programm mhux kelma bejn tnejn l-intervista tal-VOV jien Father Joe Borfi din nitkellmu ma tink Palmer fuq l-abbuż li jista' jseħħ l-abbuż sesswali li jista' jseħħ u li fil-fatt jseħħ permezz tal-internet. Namlu din il-pawsa qasira, iqgħu magħna nkunu magħkom ftit ħin ieħor.
Il-waqt tat-tieni dar, Bank of Valletta jagħtik l-opportunità biex tiffinanzja t-tieni proprjetà tiegħek sabiex dan il-pass ikun aktar faċli milli taħseb. Kellimna llum għal aktar dettalji. Termini u kundizzjonijiet japplikaw. Bank of Valletta, impenn lejn is-suċċess tiegħek.
Now let's look at how we can help children. So someone managed to get a compromising picture of a child, perhaps even airbrushed to make it more specific or explicit or something. That would be an abuse because this picture of the child now is all over the world. Mm-hmm. And the child does not even know about it. Mm-hmm. What do? You keep silent, you do nothing. You try to warn the child to pay more attention, what?
Well, the first issue is, where is the child? Mm-hmm. We have the photo. Where is the child? Where is the perpetrator? Perpetrators become far more clever and aware of not leaving too many signs of who they may be. Sometimes they're not always clever enough. And
Fortunately,
yes. But we have, as you know, we have mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands of images of children who are being sexually abused. In the UK, we have over 800,000 in our child base, which is where our images are stored. Interpol have well over millions.
Millions of pictures images. Of child, yes, children being abused.
Well over a million images. So what I'm saying is we have all the images, but how do we trace the children or how do mm-hmm. we find them? And there's some very clever forensic work being done, and we have been able to trace some children. But doing so is very difficult.
I was listening to radio, and sometimes you listen to things which are so outrageous that you start doubting whether you really heard them say that or whether they were exaggerating. So let me put these couple of cases to you, because you have more experience to see whether this is true or not. I was, this particular program, they were saying that some children are kidnapped and they are being abused, and the images of abuse are placed on the internet. They get older, they keep on getting abused, and sort of the law enforcers who are trying to do something about it, to locate the children, as you are saying, they can see these children growing 1 year after another and being abused.
Yeah.
So their life is a life of abuse.
Yes.
But is this true?
Yes, absolutely.
It's incredible.
But when I first heard about abusive images of children, when I first understood the concept in the 1990s, mm-hmm. one part of me was very relieved, one part. And that was the part which said, my goodness, no longer can the outside world disbelieve that children are abused, sexually abused, mm. or disbelieve what the children are saying, or say they are too tender in age to be able to give evidence in court, because we now have the picture, right? So in a moment, it was just a small moment, I just thought, oh my goodness, we're going to probably have something which is really going to help. But of course that was incorrect, because there are so many images and it's so difficult still to trace where the children are. But we have got cases, and there's cases I've been involved in, when we have been trying to trace. And sometimes we've seen that child grow, mature, the abuse continue over a period of time. And some we still have not found, some we have. What we need to remember is when we go in and rescue that young person, their behaviour by then has become so accommodated to the circumstances in which they're living that they will reject any involvement. They will not want people to remove them from that scenario, because their attachment, a neurotic, dangerous attachment, but their emotional attachment and need is to that perpetrator. So what we're needing to do again is rethink how we manage that scenario and make sure we've got everything in place. So when you are able to rescue, and it is literally rescue, a young person in those circumstances, that you have the right place to take them, the right person to look after them and to contain them emotionally and physically.
Yes, the most logical question after you said that would be, do we have these places? Are we providing that help? But I would like, before doing that, I would like to go back a little bit, because you said something which I tried to block from my mind, and I did not do a follow-up question, but now I think I have to put a follow-up question. Did I hear you correctly? You said images of six-month-old children abused on the internet?
Definitely, yes.
6 months?
Yes, yes. Oh, yes. And we're getting, our concern is that over the last 2 to 3, 4 years in the UK, the Internet Watch Foundation, which is a hotline for people to report if they come across abusive images of children, they can report it to the hotline. And we will ensure that the hotline will ensure that that site that's hosting them is taken down if it's within the UK, and if not, we'll inform colleague hotlines across Europe and the world.
But is it just... Is this just a group of sick people, or is it now turning also into a business and industry?
Oh, it's you've got various scenarios. You've got the ad hoc sexual abuse of a child, which is then photographed. You've got the big business crime syndicates, where big money can be made from, particularly if you've got new images, particularly if the children are younger. And particularly if the abuse is particularly horrific. And again, it's about going back to your point earlier on, which was about how if you masturbate to certain images, or if you get turned on, as it were, by certain images, then you're probably going to need more extreme images to keep your satisfaction level. So we have the same thing. We were seeing that within the images. Yeah.
Okay, so the police, social workers, schools... Let's take them one by one. Let's take the police. Are the police, by and large, because, okay, you come from Great Britain, but you have experience of police forces in other countries. Are they trained enough? Do they have enough resources? Are they making inroads? Are they having successes?
I think what we've got at the moment is we've got... how can I put it? We've got... little resources generally. Within quite a few countries, we have what I call a dedicated, specific, small group of police officers who are trained. So, for example, we've got CEOP, Child Exploitation Online Protection Centre in the UK, which is our central conduit. They don't actually go out and police. They are not for going out knocking on the door and saying, we found... your child an image. They're the conduit for the information and for the intelligence and gathering all that. And then in England, we have 43 separate police forces. Right? So we have CEOP as the central conduit. We have 43 central police forces. And each chief constable can run his police force as he thinks fit, other than they have to meet national priorities laid down. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine. And that is just within the UK... Imagine
so
the issue of communication.
Fragmentation.
But what we do have is a really, we're building up a good international scene. So with Canada, Australia, Germany, UK, and really look a very good communication system for tracing some children in some of the images. But I think we're going to have a completely different world in 10 to 15 years' time. I think we're going to have international police forces in the truest sense of the word. We're going to have to look at ways in which we really can work together. We're going to have to look at the fact that at the moment our laws are disparate across the whole world. So in one country, age of consent for sexual activity may be 14. In another country, it's 16. In another country, it could be 8. Also, the age for criminal responsibility. In the UK, a child has to be 10 or above to be able to be charged. Other countries, it's different. Also, within the legal systems that are built up around sexual abuse, internet abuse, grooming, etc., you know, they're, again, disparate all over the world. So we need to actually... we need that magic wand. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to shake it and say, we're all going to abide by the same laws, you know, so we've got the same ball game, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And let's look at what we're going to have as age of consent for children to have sex across the world. Criminal responsibility and liability, what age is that, and what laws are we going to all have in place? That will be the ideal. That is what's going to be needed. When we get there, I don't know. But in the meantime, we are trying to police and manage within this mixture, a mishmash of legalities and permissions, etc.
And the type of help that can be given by social workers, because I think even getting a child to go to court, a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and speaking about the experience is something very, very difficult for a child.
Yes. One of my drums I've beaten for 35 years in the UK mm-hmm. is about what we do and expect of children, particularly within the criminal justice mm-hmm. system. You know, I've often said, you know, I give evidence quite frequently in criminal courts and also in care proceedings for protection of children. And, you know, my tummy, you get a slight butterflies in your tummy, mm-hmm. quite rightly, because, you know, it's an important matter. But I don't get sufficient that it puts me off with doing my job properly, mm-hmm. but you get enough. So when you think that's as a hardened professional, as I call it, who's been around mm-hmm. quite a few years, I feel that what are we doing to children, you know, putting them through that system? And in the UK, we still have vigorous debates around that. We have got much better, mm-hmm. but we still got further to go.
Are children marked for life? Is it possible for them to heal? What is the experience?
I do believe children can heal. And in fact, I know children can heal because mm-hmm. I think it's a sad thing to say, but I've been around long enough to be able to see children through the system and then go into their adult life and to be fortunate enough occasionally to meet up with them and just see where they go. So children can heal. There's always hope. And just because people have been sexually abused, it does not mean to say that they have to carry that for the rest of their lives. But what is key is, and what we know is, that the sooner we get in there to assist the child and the family around the child, the better the outcomes are likely to be. And so my worry is that particularly with online abuse, we at this current moment, while you and I are talking, mm-hmm. there will be probably hundreds of thousands of young women and men mm-hmm. who have been harmed online, who are telling nobody, who may be acting out within the school setting, who may be acting out within the home settings, and no one's asking the questions. Very important piece of research which came out in 2010 from Germany, which said, asked professionals in the education and social welfare field how many people and young people they'd worked with who've been sexually abused via the internet, via the new technology. And what sort of questions did they ask to discover that? And they all said they didn't even ask the question, so they haven't got a clue, because they're frightened to ask that question, because if they ask the question, they've got to do something about it, and they're worried about, do they know enough?
Okay. We already mentioned and you already spoke about the role of parents. The last 2 minutes of the program, let's dedicate it to parents. What should they do?
Parents should wise up, get as much information as they can. They should always maintain their communications with their children and young people. That is good family life anyway. Ask, talk, discuss. Always be aware of what your young people might be doing online. It's quite naive to say, oh, in the old days we would say, put the computer in the living room and everybody's there, etc. We've got the new technology with the mobile technology in particular, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, that's not going to be the case. We've got to be real. It can be with younger children because you can put all the safeguards on, mm-hmm. but once they get to a certain age, they have to get out there and be independent. So if I was to say anything to them, I would say two things. Get your knowledge base up. Make sure you understand how to keep young people safe online. And always, always keep your lines of communication open with your young people. Ask them what they're doing. Be interested in what they're doing, just as you'd be interested, as I said earlier on, if they'd gone to see a film or play or whatever.
Thank you very much, Tink Palmer. Dikina Tink Palmer li konna qed nitkellmu magħha dwar l-esperienza tal-internet li esperienza sabiħa u fantastika ma li tiġi abbużata kif tiġi abbużata l-ħajja. Bija tal-ħajja tagħna minn nies li jridu jabbużaw. jinfadha ġobor. Ningrazzjawkom tal-attenzjoni tagħkom waqt li nagħmlu appuntament magħkom bħal lum ġimgħa fejn ma' persuna oħra interessanti niddiskutu suġġetti oħra interessanti. Saħħa.
Għadkom kemm smajtu. Mhux kelma bejtnej. L-intervista tal-Bank of Valletta. Produzzjoni u preżentazzjoni ta' Father Joe Borch u l-Professur Joe Pirotta. Il-programm li għadkom kemm smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqat tajba tal-Bank of Valletta.